I am Jace Curry, the Director of Community Outreach at Women Offshore. A popular topic here at Women Offshore has centered on maternity benefits at shipping and offshore companies. In this mini-series, you and I are going to learn about different opportunities around maternity benefits and how women are accomplishing their career dreams and family planning. This is the Women Offshore Podcast. Women Offshore is a 501c3, a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting a diverse workforce on the water. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Women Offshore Podcast. And today I have a very special guest who's actually a classmate of mine from Mass Maritime. So we have with us here Jordan Patsios. Jordan, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you.
Thanks. Go Bucks.
Go Bucks. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to say that on air. To start off, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Jace. My name's Jordan Patsios, and I am the Seafarers Compliance Manager for International Registries, and I'm also a Deputy Commissioner of Maritime Affairs for the Republic of the Marshall Islands.
Amazing. And so you have had quite the career since we graduated. Tell us a little bit about that and what that looked like for you.
Well, when I went to Mass Maritime, my intention was to study marine transportation. While I was there, I changed my major to international maritime business. And so I've been able to work in the port of New York and New Jersey doing operations in their yard as well as on the marine side. After graduation, I worked for Maersk Distribution, also known as Damco Distribution, doing warehousing and logistics. I worked offshore shortly thereafter doing environmental compliance, and now I'm back on land doing flag state administration.
Awesome. And tell us a little bit more about your career offshore. What did you do? What made you venture offshore? All the things.
So I started working offshore in 2015, and I was doing environmental compliance. The company that I had worked for had gotten into trouble with the Department of Justice, and they had hired a bunch of seafarers to essentially oversee the environmental compliance plan to, you know, make sure that the ISO 14001 management system was being carried out. And it was kind of, I would refer to it as a junk drawer. It's like everything that people didn't want to do, we ended up doing out there. But it was great because I got to work with all the departments. So I got a great understanding of the way a drill ship operates that way.
Yeah, definitely. And so I know you said that this had kind of been your lifelong dream. You had wanted to go offshore while you were in school. Mm-hmm. When you made your career choice, were you thinking about having a family? What thoughts did you have there?
Okay, so like I said, I originally went to Mass Maritime to study marine transportation. And while I was on sea term freshman year, the realization hit me that I wasn't, and I thought I wasn't going to be able to have a family and ship out.
Yeah.
And so when kind of faced with to having to make the choice in between the two, having a family was always my number one priority. And so I changed my major to international maritime business. But after graduating, I still had that dream of working offshore that I couldn't shake.
Yeah.
The financial freedom that comes with working offshore was unlike anything else I could find on land. The peace that I always had being offshore was something that I could never articulate to someone else unless you've been to sea. And so I decided to chase that route in my career and start working offshore.
That's amazing. And I think that that's so inspirational for a number of reasons. You know, in the women offshore community and in the work that I have done with cadets and just talking to people at different academies, that's for women, it's always one of the things that tends to come up in conversation is, okay, well, can I do this and have a family? Is this realistic? What does this look like? And so I admire that.
You know, it's sad. We get in our head before anybody else does, you know, like no one had ever told me like, oh, well, you won't be able to have a family working offshore. But we kind of take that burden on ourselves, or at least I did at the academy, when faced with the realization of after school, what is my life going to look like? And something that I love about the women offshore community is we highlight that we are able to have both.
Yeah.
And how important it is that we talk about it, because it's not widely talked about at the academies.
No, it's not. And at the time, both in school and shortly after graduation, like, I was not aware of any female mariners that had started families and then continued going back to sea. Now I know a ton of phenomenal women, like yourself included, who have made that journey. But at the time, it really didn't even seem like an option.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us about finding out that you were pregnant. Because you were offshore for this, correct?
Yeah. So I was actually pregnant offshore twice. And the first time I was pregnant offshore, I didn't even know it for like a week into my hitch. And I had had symptoms. I had missed my period. And I didn't know who else to go to because there were no other females on board. So I went to the medic. And luckily, it was a male medic who never made me feel uncomfortable or ashamed or weird about it. I told him my symptoms. He had a pregnancy test on board. I took it. So I found out I was pregnant offshore the first time.
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine, but I'm so glad that you had someone who was professional and was able to hold that in confidence for you and also just not be weird about it, right?
Yeah. And I was nervous when I saw him out on deck or if I saw him in the galley, was he going to be like giving me looks or anything? And you're right, he was totally professional. And I was really grateful for that. About a week later, after finding out I was pregnant, I ended up miscarrying on board and I was bleeding a lot. And I went to the captain and I had to tell the captain, like, hey, I was pregnant. I'm not pregnant anymore. I might need a DNC. I need to be seen by a doctor.
Right.
And that was a lot and a very uncomfortable conversation to have with the captain, who was understandably taken off guard. So he put me on the next helicopter out. I got seen by a doctor who essentially told me I didn't need a DNC and that I was just going to miscarry naturally. And then they put me back on the helicopter and sent me back to work.
So you went straight back to work after that?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we were discharging overboard as the helicopter was landing. So they were like, hey, put on your coveralls, get back out there.
Thank you for sharing that with us. Like, I know that this is an incredibly difficult conversation to have. And I just appreciate like your openness and honesty and willing to talk about this, because I know women who have struggled with miscarrying and at sea as well. And it's just, it's an incredibly heartbreaking situation for all. But thank you for helping normalize that conversation and saying like you're not alone.
When I found out I was miscarrying, there was a lot of shame involved in it. I wondered if it was my fault. And the likelihood, I think I read a statistic that 1 in 4 women will end up miscarrying. And sometimes we don't even know it so early on. But knowing and being offshore, I had a lot of shame about that. And I didn't really have anybody to talk to about it. There were no other females. I felt uncomfortable talking to any of the men out there. And so if you're listening to this and this is something that you are struggling with, you're certainly not alone.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, any words of wisdom for a woman who's either been in that situation and is beating herself up about it or is going through that right now?
I think it's important to remember that our bodies have been doing this for thousands of years and it knows what it's doing. And it's hard not to get emotional. It's hard not to feel the guilt or the shame, but it's so early on in the pregnancy that, God forbid, something were to happen, your body would protect the fetus before it would protect you. And so it wasn't meant to happen. And that's hard to hear and it's heartbreaking. But there is a good news. I did get pregnant a second time and I found out shortly before I left offshore, about 6 months later. And because of my previous miscarriage, the midwife wanted to ensure that my HCG levels were doubling appropriately before I ended up going offshore.
Sure.
And so I had found out I was pregnant in the car outside the doctor's office. And as excited as I was, my first reaction was pure terror.
Mm.
It was 2016 and they were laying off people left and right, every hitch. And
yeah.
I was scared that this was just going to be a reason to get rid of me. And because I had miscarried before, I decided I wasn't going to tell a single soul on board that I was pregnant.
Oh my gosh. And I remember this time very well, just across the industry. A lot of people had so much fear around, okay, will I have a job tomorrow? Do I share things like a pregnancy openly, or will that be, like, legally it shouldn't be cause for, it can't be cause for termination, right? But at the same time, just because there were mass layoffs going on, like, it would just be easy to justify as another layoff, right?
Right. And for me, it was important that I have the healthcare coverage.
Mm.
So I didn't want to put myself in any position that I would have to potentially forfeit that. And especially bringing into this world a new baby, you're going to need healthcare. So that was really my fear.
Yeah.
And the coveralls on me were baggy, so it's not like I was showing very early, but I had decided at 20 weeks I would tell the crew, and tell mm-hmm. the captain, tell the people on land, our land staff. And the reactions were mixed when I ended up telling the entire crew. Some of them were incredibly supportive, but some of them had a lot of judgment.
Yeah.
Behind me being offshore, being halfway through my pregnancy. And sometimes it's a cultural thing, but I also think it's unusual for this industry. It's not normal. And so they really weren't sure what to do with me.
No, you see so few women out there in general, never mind pregnant women, right?
Right. Yeah. Shortly after that hitch, I ended up trying to get short-term disability. My midwife filled out all the paperwork because the farther along I was, the guys on the rig were making jokes about, like, oh, your baby's going to be delivered out here and it's not going to know who his daddy is because there's going to be so many men around, or just the idea of giving birth offshore just terrified me. So
I know. I always told my rig crew, I was like, trust me, I want to have the baby out there way less than you want me to have it out there.
That's exactly right. So I ended up applying for short-term disability. I knew that they were doing mass layoffs in the office, so I wasn't going to be able to work in the office, but I was just hoping for something. And initially, it was denied. I was told by HR that pregnancy isn't an illness, and so I needed to either go back to work or I needed to quit.
Which is so strange because for most employers, maritime or not, right, with employees shoreside, short-term disability is a part of their maternity leave in the U.S., right? You take your short-term disability, and then if you qualify for maternity leave, if the company has a policy or you do FMLA, so that's bananas that it was denied.
I remember having a conversation with my HR rep and saying, okay, if this is denied, what are my options?
Right.
For maternity, like, what is postpartum going to look like? And they had no policies and they weren't able to give me any guidelines. They just told me, you know, the rules for people on land are different than the rules for people who work offshore. And offshore, you either work or you quit. And I think she anticipated me quitting.
Sure.
Just one less person to lay off during that time. But like I said, my insurance was like a priority. So I kept going back offshore. At 28 weeks, we had a bad calcium bromide and zinc bromide spill during completions. And doing environmental compliance, I was responsible to go out there and kind of help manage the cleanup with the chief mate.
Sure.
And while I was out there, 28 weeks pregnant, me waddling down main deck with with this fluid halfway up my shin, the rig manager had called me and said, hey, I need you to get the SDS. We have to call Bessie and the Coast Guard about the spill going right overboard. And so as I pulled the SDS on the very front page, it said may cause fetal harm.
Oh my gosh.
And that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I told you about all the guilt that you feel with a miscarriage when you are physically feeling your baby kick out there and knowing I mean, I didn't realize at the time that the chemical may cause fetal harm, and that's a failure on my part. But seeing that in black and white on the front page was just, I'm like, really?
Yeah. And then you're looking at an SDS that is a totally different can of worms than what you were just considering 5 or 10 minutes before.
In that moment right there, I felt like I had to choose between my family and my career. I had made the internal decision that I wasn't going back. Like, we were going to tough it out, whatever we needed to do. But the realization that the hazards out there, especially so far along in pregnancy, were just ones that were unpredictable. There's no way I would have been able to predict that spill. So I went back home after that hitch, and I had contacted my superintendent, and I sent him the SDS. I sent him my midwife short-term disability request. I had explained to him, I only have 12 weeks left of my pregnancy. I need your help. And he battled it out with HR, and I ended up getting my FMLA early. Yeah, I was out there till 28 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
I'm proud of that fact.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something to be proud of. And then also in advocating for yourself and at that point your unborn child and saying, hey, I know that you guys don't have policies. I know that there's no rules, but this is what is best for me and my family, and or maybe being afraid, but doing it anyways in that environment especially. So did your job change at all? I know we've kind of talked about this, but you were still doing the vast majority of your work, maybe just walking a little bit slower, being extra cautious going down the stairs.
Yeah, it didn't change at all. Like you said, I was just walking slower. I had fallen in the shaker house like a year or two prior because I wasn't paying attention. And I had kind of avoided the shaker house after that, you know, just being acutely aware, making sure that you're using your handrails when you're going up and down the stairs.
Yeah. Were there any accommodations that you wished you had had during that time, Jordan? Either on board or being able to move into a shoreside role? Because we're the ones who know this best, right? Like having worked out there and seeing, okay, well, this is what was difficult for me during pregnancy, or, you know, this is a reasonable accommodation that could have been made. And obviously this varies company to company, even, you know, vessel to vessel, supervisor to supervisor. So just any like best practices or anything that you can think of.
We didn't have any accommodations specifically for being pregnant. Of course, I would have liked to transition to something shoreside. And hopefully coming out of the pandemic, companies are seeing that there's a lot that can be done remotely.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to have someone there. I do wish that some of my job responsibilities would have been tweaked a little bit. I used to have to go in the man rider basket to go deliver the garbage record receipt to the offshore supply vessel captain assign. And I just don't think that's a necessary function of the job, right?
Yeah. Putting that in like a little paperwork basket, attaching it to the crane hook and just sending it down without a human accompanying it or something right. Like that.
Yeah, definitely. Or maybe when we did have a spill, maybe not being the one to help manage it. I'm sure there was more that I could have done from afar, or even if I was getting supplies out of the SOPEP box,
mm-hmm.
but to actually be in that environment. The other accommodation I wish I had was a list of the chemicals on board, and as they would come on, getting those SDSs
ahead of time.
Yeah, just so we could keep track of them. They were supposed to give them to me to upload, but it didn't always work out sure. That way. And especially during completions, as things were coming off and on so quickly, you don't think it's a big deal. You think, oh, it'll only be on board for a couple of days. But especially for those more hazardous chemicals, I think they're important.
No, that's a great point. Was there anything you were surprised by either during your pregnancy or after?
I was surprised that there were no maternal policies for my company. It was a huge company. We had 20 vessels, and there was no timeline of what it looked like to have a family or to be pregnant offshore. I was also surprised by how wonderful some of the crew were for me. When I had told the crew that I was pregnant, there was a couple of roustabouts in specific that come to mind that would take me under their wing and be like, hey, you know, we'll run and do the helicopter. Don't worry about it. Or, you know, another roustabout said, hey, my wife gave birth 6 months ago. Breastfeeding didn't work out for her. She'd love to give you her pump. Or, you know, just seeing me as
a human.
I'm still an asset to the team. Yeah, I don't even know how to word it, but still an asset to the team, right? Like, I shouldn't be avoided like the plague. Yeah, just to be seen as human out there. I had some great roustabouts. I can't say enough good things about them on our crew. Great crane operators who really looked out for me on deck. And I'm grateful for that.
And that's such an important point, is that we're very fortunate, you know, in the community to hear a lot of stories about men being phenomenal allies on board. But even like you said, not avoiding me and still talking and like not being weird about stuff, that goes such a long way, right? Especially with a willingness to help as well.
Yeah. And I have to say, the greatest allies that I found when I was pregnant, especially, were those that stuck up for me when I wasn't even around.
Mm.
It's one thing to say it to my face that they're supportive and, you know, and to offer things to me, like I was telling you that one roustabout did, but to know as people were making comments behind my back, that the crew would stick up for me. I had one particular instance where I think the cultural norm is that the woman is to be home with the child. And so seeing me as now a mother or a, you know, a soon to be mother, somebody was making a comment along the lines of like, you know, she's going to have this baby. She needs to be out of here. She needs to quit. And someone had just made the comment of like, didn't your wife have a baby like 2 months ago? And you're out here still, you know? And so I think it's just seeing who is really an ally comes down to those moments when it's not just to our face.
That's such a good point. So tell us about going back offshore postpartum, because you went back, what, 5 weeks postpartum?
Yeah, 5.5 weeks.
Oh my gosh. So your hormones are going crazy. You're still phantom hearing a baby cry, even though you're hundreds of miles away.
My daughter is one and I still hear that cry. It doesn't go away. All in all, I think being pregnant offshore was completely manageable. I wasn't miserable out there. I still had the energy to do my job. I loved being out there. Largely, the crew was accepting.
Yeah.
Postpartum, though, was like a completely different beast.
Mm.
Like you said, I went back offshore 5.5 weeks. And the only reason I had to go back offshore is because my FMLA ran out. And again, HR had come to me and said, you're either going to go back offshore or you're going to quit. And so I made the decision to fly my 5.5 week old baby to my mother so that she could watch the baby while I went offshore.
Oh my gosh.
And I'll tell you what, I have never cried so much in my life. Like, I'm laughing about it now, but at the time, it just felt completely devastating to have to go back so quickly.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even been cleared from a doctor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I went back offshore. They had assigned me a vessel that I had never been on before. I didn't get to go back to my old vessel, which was tough. And because, to add another element to this, because I was breastfeeding, I was pumping every 2 to 3 hours before I went offshore. And so when I landed on board my vessel, the first place I went was to the camp boss and I introduced myself and I said, hey, it's already been cleared by HR and the superintendent that I can store my milk. I brought a lunch pail. What freezer can I put it in and where?
Hey, new friend, where do I put my milk?
I'm like, ugh. Okay, so awkward.
And was he accommodating?
Yeah, he was wonderful. His wife had 4 children. And so he didn't think the whole like breastfeeding and pumping was weird, but he did think it was a little bit strange that I'm like, hi, I'm Jordan. Like, help me out. So he showed me where I can put it in the freezer. It was like off to the back out of the way so that they had plenty of space in there. It was gray, so it blended in. And then I got to introduce myself to the captain after that. So going back postpartum was difficult emotionally.
Sure.
And physically having to leave my child. But there's more than just we're healing after giving birth. Like you said, your hormones and, you know, adding the pumping element to it was a little, again, unusual, but we got through it.
Postpartum is easily the hardest thing that I have ever done. And that was with a large amount of maternity leave and working shoreside at the time. Yeah. So like I was very fortunate in my situation, and I can't even imagine being 5.5 weeks postpartum, flying, you know, your child away from their home, your home, and then being like, hey, I'm here for work.
Right. And I knew nobody. And so it was like, you already feel lonely. You feel a lot of shame and guilt about being away from your child. People are just getting used to you or like meeting you for the first time. And yeah, I truly think that when companies are looking at creating a maternity policy, that while being pregnant is obviously an important part of it, what postpartum looks like is also something that should definitely be considered, because I think, like you said, that is even more difficult than pregnancy.
I know you had a couple hiccups with your breastfeeding or with your pumping journey at sea.
Yeah, let me tell you about that. So the crew was out fishing one night and they decided that they were going to bring the fish in and store it in the freezer. And a couple of our officers got nosy and opened up my lunch pail, even though it was labeled with my name, and saw that my milk was in it. Anyway, they thought it was disgusting that my milk would be stored in with the food that the crew ate, and went to the captain and told him that they all felt it was gross and that they think that I should stop.
Which is a very personal choice that a woman and her child and maybe her partner should make, not the crew on board her drilling vessel.
I'll tell you what, I was so mad. I was so mad that I got made to feel like what I was doing was disgusting, shameful. And here I am just trying to do it all, trying to be discreet, keep the crew's feelings in mind, right? I didn't have a hot pink cooler that said like, you know.
Milk.
Yeah, right? Milk. And so the captain called me into his office and he said, hey, the crew had approached me about this. They think it's gross. And so you can't store your milk in there anymore.
Oh my gosh.
At this point, like I said, I was so mad. I asked him, well, where else on board is there a freezer that I can store it in? And he said, the only other freezer on board is in his cabin. And that wasn't an option. And so I told him I had got it cleared with the supervision on land. And so if that's something that he wanted me to do, I would prefer it if he put it in an email and sent it to me.
That is so good, because I don't know that I would have thought of that. And so this is a great lesson learned for other women and moms at sea is, okay, well, I cleared this with HR. I cleared this with our shoreside management. I was told it wouldn't be an issue. I'm going to need you to put that in an email because it goes against what we talked about before I got here.
Yeah. From a compliance standpoint, if it's not written down, it didn't happen.
Mm.
As you know from being offshore, that's why we have to write down PMs and stop cards and JSAs and risk assessments, everything we do. If you don't write it down, it didn't happen. And so if you're listening to this, and maybe it's not just, you know, the captain's going to tell you to stop pumping milk, but if there's anything that happens offshore that goes against policies or something that you feel like needs to be documented,
yeah,
definitely, definitely, definitely do it. And so after I told him that, he quickly got on the phone with the superintendent, because he wasn't about to write that email.
Sure. Right?
He got on the phone with the superintendent and essentially said, what am I going to do? And I left his office at that point. And about 30 minutes later, I was called back into his office and said, okay, well, you can keep pumping then. You can keep storing your milk in there. I'll handle the crew. And so in that moment, sticking up for yourself and for your baby, who's not even there, was really important. And I think it also is good for the leadership on board the vessel to show the crew that this woman is welcomed and supported, and you were being nosy. This is none of your business. You know, I'm a firm believer that if it's important to management, it'll be important to everybody else.
Absolutely.
And so having, I mean, the reluctant support of the captain, I'm sure he was just trying to smooth things over with the crew on board. He didn't know me.
It must have been so hard being brand new to the vessel and then having all this go down in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah. And I really hope companies think about that. when they're doing postpartum planning, essentially.
Yeah.
That was one of the toughest things for me, going to a crew where I knew nobody. And I think postpartum, you need that support. Not that I want to sit there and tell somebody about how much I miss my child, but to not have to be navigating a new crew, you know, you're trying to find out where the bathrooms are on board, right? Or how you get to pre-tower on top of everything else going on with you. And so keeping as much normalcy as possible postpartum is really supportive for women out there. And it just provides some stability when you already feel unstable.
No, that's a great point, Jordan. Can you think of any other changes that companies can make to support moms at sea?
Well, like I said, having the policy or having the discussion with women, like I said, this was something I knew I wanted back in the academy. I knew I wanted a family, but I also knew I wanted a life at sea. And so whether it's having the candid conversation with a woman after she's hired and or when she approaches the company about being pregnant and how, you know, it could be mutually beneficial. I think something that Women Offshore also does really well is having that community of women. Being a female is so unusual anyways, but to be a mother is even more unusual. And so it wasn't until I went to a Women Offshore conference in Houston that I even met other mothers working offshore. And just knowing that I wasn't alone, knowing what I was doing wasn't putting a huge, terrible mom sticker on my head, was really motivating for me to continue on and just hit some of my goals.
No, that's phenomenal, Jordan. Thank you so much for your candor, for sharing your story today, for talking about some incredibly hard topics. And I just commend you for your career at sea, for advocating for yourself and for your family, and for making it all happen. Thank you for sharing with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. Here at Women Offshore, we're dedicated to talking about what impacts women in the offshore workforce. If you've enjoyed this episode and want to contribute, please donate and consider setting up a recurring donation at womenoffshore.org/donation. Until next time, stay safe out there and we'll talk to you soon.
Before you go, here are some events on deck from my colleague Savannah at the Oil and Gas Global Network.
Hey everybody, it's Savannah from OGGN, and here are the events on deck for June 2021. This month we have 6 events, but if you'd like the full list, you can click the link in the show notes to sign up for our events newsletter. We send it out every month, and it includes more info about the events that I talk about here. We even include events that occur 2 months ahead of time, so if you're interested in always staying in the loop about oil and gas events, make sure to check that out. This month, OGGN will be hosting 2 events. One is online and one is in person. For our online event, we're hosting a live stream titled Deal Value Creation, M&A and ONG. This is going to be on June the 2nd. And for our in-person event, we're relaunching our happy hours. It's been far too long since we had a good happy hour, so I'm sure plenty of you will be excited to hear that our next happy hour will be at the Cannon in Houston, Texas on June 24th. At this event, you'll be able to meet some of OGGN's hosts and network with other oil and gas industry professionals, all while enjoying great food and drinks. We hope to see you there. Other than OGGN's events, we have 2 in-person and 2 online events. First up, we have our 2 in-person events, which are the Energy Capital Conference on June 2nd at the Omni Houston Hotel and the U.S. Police and Fire Championships from June 10th to the 21st. The Police and Fire Championships will be hosted in multiple locations, so make sure to check out our events newsletter for more information about that. Next, we have our 2 online events, the first being the Post-Industrial Summit Series. This event actually started on May 4th, but it'll be ending later this month on June 22nd, so there's still plenty to see. And our second online event is the Big Data Industry Summit from June 9th to 10th. If you have any questions about these events or any of our shows, make sure to reach out to me through my email in the show notes. That's all for June. I hope you guys have a great month, and thanks for tuning in.